Welcome back, everybody, to episode 10 of This Week in Japan, presented by Ryu Tokyo. Coming to you live from Roppongi, Tokyo, I'm your host, Julian Domanski, and joining me is my co-host and founder of Ryu Tokyo, Yasuharu Matsuno.
Hi, everyone. Tokyo's really hot and humid today, but hope you're staying safe and comfortable wherever you are.
Today is June 12th, and in this episode, we're going to be discussing the following big news stories. Tokyo is set to lift the red alert, a Black Lives Matter protest is held in Osaka, monkeys pull a daring escape from a Chiba zoo, a teen murders his family with a store-bought crossbow, and comedian Ken Watabe is caught in an affair scandal. Despite the recent increase in corona cases, after lifting the state of emergency and moving to step 2 of reopening, Tokyo has decided to lift the alert and move to step 3. The lifting of the alert was triggered by having over 4 consecutive days of under 20 new cases. However, the streak was broken on Thursday as 22 new cases were reported. Despite surpassing 20 cases, the Tokyo government is planning to move forward to step 3. This will allow restaurants to stay open until midnight as compared to 10 p.m. in step 2, and will allow a number of businesses to resume operation. This includes nightclubs, live houses, girls' bars, snack clubs, karaoke, and more. Citizens are excited to have a large section of daily life return, but are also uneasy due to the steady number of cases. So the COVID curve is looking pretty flat now in Tokyo. Mm. But yeah, there was a little bit of a spike at the start of this week. And it's going up very slowly. So the government, I guess, looking at the cases, it's over 22 new cases are reported yesterday. But they're kind of still deciding to go ahead with the plan?
I suppose so. I mean, before yesterday, it was less than 20 people getting infected per day. 3 days in a row. Mm. So I would say overall the numbers are still quite low.
Yeah, they look low, but it feels a bit weird that they set these parameters, but then they're like, it only broke by a little bit, so let's just carry on with step three. Because I thought the whole point was of having these numbers was to say that like they have to meet these targets, otherwise we can't proceed. It's almost like saying like just having one day of 22 is like a bit of an inconvenience, so they're just going to pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah, so I see your point, but based on their threshold, they're looking at the average number of people getting infected per week. So even if one day they have more than 20 people getting infected, if the average is lower than 20, then they can lift the alert. Mm. So that's the rationale behind it.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I mean, if you just react to a single day of unusually high numbers, then maybe that's kind of a bad thing just to react so quickly.
You know, I think so.
Maybe analyzing the average data is probably the better call. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it wasn't wildly high, was it? 22 versus, whatever was before it. You know, the numbers have all been below 20. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a massive jump. So in terms of moving to step three, I think everybody's hoping to kind of get some of the nightlife back. But it's not going to be as normal. You know, all the restaurants I've been to since the state of emergency lifted, they're all implementing the kind of seating spacing. You know, every other seat is blocked off.
Yeah, we see that a lot.
Yeah, so that's good to see. Every shop has like hand sanitizer on the door. Mm. Almost every like register has like a plastic sheet or like an acrylic shield put up to protect you between the staff.
Right.
So I'm wondering, more like nightclubs and things where, you know, they're a bit more free, I guess, you know, like when you're dancing with people or you go to a concert. Maybe concerts with seating will be fine. We've kind of discussed this before a few episodes ago with a simulation of a concert that was only filled to a 15% capacity.
Right.
So maybe we'll see something like that.
Yeah, in any case, I think this is a good news for a lot of people in Tokyo. Yeah, as you mentioned, except for some like nightclubs and stuff, nightlife entertainment. Mm. Mostly all the businesses are, going back to normal. Also, I heard that the government is now considering lifting the travel restrictions from 4 countries.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they're Vietnam, Thailand, Australia, and New Zealand. Mm. Because those countries have low numbers. Mm. But what's being considered is to limit the number of people who can enter the country to 250 per day. And I think this is still a very low number, considering that we had tens of thousands of people coming to Japan every day.
That's it, yeah.
But as a first step, yeah, it is right to keep the numbers low, right?
That's always, everyone talks about, you know, opening the floodgates and just kind of returning back to normal. Even though the Japanese government, you know, was a bit slow to respond to the case in the first place, I'd say they're pretty much on the right course now. They seem to have corrected and they seem to be taking the measures. So I'm happy that they're not just rushing back.
Right.
And these countries that they're kind of opening back up to, these have all been countries with very low numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like anyone. So for example, the UK, which has had, it's got the highest numbers in Europe now. I would not suggest letting people from the UK come to Japan right now.
Right.
But unfortunately, that means that I can't leave. I can leave, but I can't come back.
Mm-hmm. Those 250 people are mainly for business-related people.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can understand from the government's standpoint, it's just to kind of start stimulating things again, you know? They're saying that it's also like medical staff. If you're like a scientist or something, I think that's one of the occupations that is allowed. Business people, I assume, as well.
For sure.
But then obviously, even if you're, like, you're a businessman, that's a pretty generic term, right? So it probably means like, you know, like a CEO of a big company or, you know, they're trying to make sure it's like important people or people who have like influence or I assume money, because that's what they're missing at the moment, isn't it?
Right.
You know, with the tourism gone, Japanese tourism industry is valuable, very valuable, right? So
yeah, so as you imply, it will be kind of interesting to see like who are allowed to enter Japan and who are not, you know?
I think so, yeah. So yeah, we'll let you guys know next week how we're going on with stage 3 and if stage 4 is going to be in sight anytime soon. Right, so on to our second story of the week. This Sunday saw thousands gather in Osaka to march in support of the Black Lives Matter movement. The march was organized by Black Lives Matter Kansai Group, which champions equality and justice for black people in Japan and across the world. The march consisted of a diverse mix of both Japanese people and foreigners, with numbers reaching around 2,000 according to police. Recent protests in America over police brutality and the killing of George Floyd have inspired similar events across the world. While Japan is predominantly Japanese, there is a growing number of Japanese people with mixed heritage, such as the top tennis player Naomi Osaka. These people with mixed heritage, sometimes referred to as hafu, are raising their voices more often, both in public and online, to address issues they face. The peaceful protest on Sunday has been polarizing between netizens online in Japan, with some criticizing the lack of social distancing at such a vital time, and others downright denying its importance with comments like, "There is no discrimination in Japan to black people." Well, that last comment is absolutely absurd. And I've definitely seen some of these kind of comments on Twitter and other places. So yeah, so obviously you're a Japanese person, but have you ever like witnessed racism directly in Japan, or I don't know, what do you think about it in general?
I think that racism in Japan may be less obvious and less physical than that in the US, but it certainly exists.
Okay.
And historically, racism against other Asian people, most notably Chinese or Korean people living in Japan, have been a societal issue. And not only against other Asians, but almost all non-Japanese people in general, I would say. And that includes, unfortunately, black people as well. For example, I read an article written by a black person living in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And he shared his story that whenever he sits on a train, he barely finds other Japanese people sitting next to him. And I can, you know, totally imagine that, even though this is ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, that's the classic, the gaijin seat problem, right?
But have you experienced such thing? Because, you know, I'm a local Japanese, so...
Yeah, it's hard to say. Because, like, when I first heard about the concept of the gaijin seat, I didn't believe people. Because I always felt that people were sitting next to me. But, you know, over 2 years of living in Japan now, there has been a couple of times, and it's usually, like, old people. That, like, you'll visibly see them walk onto the train, look at you, and then walk down the carriage. Say there's like in the whole carriage, how many seats in a carriage? About 50 seats, right? So the only two free seats, there's one next to you and there's one right at the other end of the carriage. But they physically will actively choose to walk all the way down to the end of the carriage.
Right.
Even if they're like a little old lady and they can't even walk properly, just instead of having to sit next to you. And I've heard lots of theories about why this happens, but the most common guess is that they're just afraid that for some reason you're just suddenly going to start talking to them. Because apparently all foreigners just talk to strangers.
Right.
You know, and it's just kind of that almost comical, like, ignorant, the lack of exposure to of a lot of Japanese people to foreign cultures. They just assume too much based on what they've seen on TV or whatever.
As you know, like, Japan was shutting the border for more than 200 years in Edo era. And so I think such an introverted mentality is still ingrained somewhere in the people's mindset. And I'm Japanese and I like many things about Japan. But this is one thing I sometimes wish if Japanese people in general are, you know, like, more open-minded.
Yeah, yeah. Saying that though, like, I have actually had more often than I've been ignored for the gaijin seat, I've actually had quite a few experiences on the train when, like, old people will just start talking to me.
Oh, Japanese people?
Yeah, yeah, Japanese. And they'll just start talking to me in Japanese. And it's very random. They don't even say hello. They'll just, like, ask me a question. I remember once I was coming back from Yokohama on the train. I had my guitar with me, my guitar case. And there was an old man sitting next to me. And he said, like, I can't remember. He asked me something like, oh, are you playing a concert tonight or something like that? And I just said, oh, no, I was at work. You know, I teach guitar. And then he had all these, like, these brochures. He was on his way to, like, a classical concert. And then he was telling me about all, like, the artists he was going to watch and stuff. And, like, he was, like, super friendly. And he didn't even ask, like, where are you from? He just wanted to talk about music. And, like, that's happened to me quite a few times.
Oh, okay. You know, so maybe they thought that you are a rock star from the UK.
Maybe. I don't know. But that's what he didn't even ask where I was from. So that was, like, the complete opposite end of the spectrum, you know? So for me, I don't feel like I've experienced it that much. But then again, with these kind of topics, I always feel a bit like maybe I shouldn't say too much as a white male from Britain. You know, like, I've never really experienced racism
in Japan, and
anywhere in the world, you know, and I can't ever get in that mindset of someone who has experienced it or people who experience it on a daily basis, you know. So especially with these kind of Black Lives Matter issues, I would rather just listen and not add my opinion too much because I can't get into that position, if you know what I mean.
Right. I totally get it. But for me, right, I used to live in New York until 3 years ago. I spent a couple of years there. And I see that the racism actually exists. And I can totally relate myself to that. So I think this is a good thing that some Japanese people are showing support towards the movement.
Oh, yeah,
it's not
yeah.
really against the racism in Japan, maybe, but I understand it as more of a, you know, support for the worldwide movement.
Yeah.
You know, to enhance the black people's, like, social, like, positions.
Yeah, yeah.
Status.
Actually, for you guys at home, as a recommendation, if you're on YouTube, there's a channel called Black Experience Japan, I think it's called.
Yeah, I saw that too.
And I'm sorry, I forget the name of the guy who runs the channel, but it's really interesting. He basically does, like interview videos, and he just sits down with, you know, not necessarily influential black people, but, like, people who have interesting careers or, you know, people who have interesting stories. And it's really eye-opening to hear all this kind of stuff, you know. As a non-Japanese and, you know, as a white person, for me, you know, I don't experience a lot of what these people are talking about. So for me, it's kind of a learning experience. So I think that the name of the channel is good as always, you know, Black Experience Japan. So, yeah, if any of you guys at home have interest in that, then it's worth checking out. So obviously the Black Lives Matter, it's not a new issue, but at the moment it's global news and it's really picking up speed. So I'd imagine that we'll be talking about this again in the future. So until then, maybe next week, we'll keep you guys updated on the situation in Japan. So a slightly comical story for our third piece this week. This Wednesday, around 70 macaque monkeys escaped from the Takagoyama Shinzen Zoo in Futsu City, Chiba Prefecture. A zookeeper discovered a hole in the animal's caging and quickly phoned police that morning. As of now, none of the monkeys have been seen, but the zoo plans to continue leaving out food and expects a full recovery of the primates. The hole discovered in the cage appears to be a man-made cut using metal clippers. Last September, a strong typhoon managed to blow the cage away, letting the monkeys escape as well. While the majority were later recaptured, it appears that someone is behind the escape this time. Perhaps some of the ones that got away have come back to free their friends. This is just hilarious. I love when animals escape zoos, or like they just get into like shenanigans. It's so fun. I've actually been seeing a lot recently Japanese people protesting against animal rights and things like that. It seems to be that movement seems to be picking up a little bit in Japan. So I'm wondering if it's maybe something to do with that.
Oh, probably. You know? Yeah. We may never know, but that could be the case.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm not supposed to laugh, but this is just funny, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a crime. And whoever that broke the fence should be caught. But when I imagine like 70 monkeys escaping from the zoo and running freely.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's refreshing in a way, especially after we went through the lockdown for 2 months, right?
Yeah, that's it. I think at the moment, any kind of just funny news is very much welcomed. but in my head, it's way funnier than probably what happened. They probably just ran off into the trees and that was it.
Mm.
But in my head, I'm imagining like they were like running around stealing people's like phones and stuff and causing all kinds of mayhem.
Right. I think it's more likely the latter because these 70 monkeys are still not caught.
True, yeah.
Yeah.
Even
though like all the zoo people and the police are actively searching for them. So
yeah. I like the optimism where they say that they think they will get all the monkeys back. That's pretty optimistic.
Yeah, very optimistic to say the least.
Well, monkeys are like a wild animal in Japan. Mm, like they're native right. to Japan. Yeah. So, you know, that they would have no problem just feeling very at home.
Mm-hmm.
Once they get out of the city.
Yeah, yeah.
And Chiba, it's not as densely populated as the central area of Tokyo, right?
Right.
So they probably wouldn't take them that long to get to a wooded area.
Mm, I kind of hope so.
To the mountains.
Mm. Have you seen the movie Shawshank Redemption? Yeah, somehow this news reminded me of that movie.
Yeah, maybe if they dug the tunnel out, mm-hmm. you know, they hid mm-hmm. it behind a poster.
Oh, yeah. That's a big part.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, there's many movies about that kind of concept.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's pretty funny. So yeah, last September, the cage was actually blown away by a typhoon.
Mm.
I mean, that's also kind of comical.
Mm.
Poor little monkeys. I mean, I hope none of the monkeys were blown away. That must be kind of terrifying.
Mm.
That's sort of surprising because a cage is full of holes, right? So I'm surprised that it has such like wind resistance that it would actually be ripped up by a typhoon. That's kind of crazy, isn't it?
Mm.
But I guess maybe after that event, they all came back.
I wonder how.
Yeah,
right?
maybe I guess zoo animals. It's like when you let your cat out, right?
Mm.
The cats love to be free generally, but they know where their food is, right? They're like, oh, that human always gives me food.
Mm.
So maybe for these monkeys, they're not wild. Maybe they can pick their own food or whatever. But they know that like every day at this time, someone gives them food. So I'd imagine at least half of them would come back for food. But I don't know, you might have a few renegades.
They're
just like, just go off. Maybe it's like a Planet of the Apes situation, kind of monkey uprising here to just finish off what has been a pretty terrible year so far.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? So our next story of the week is unfortunately a little bit more somber. This week, tragedy struck a Kobe family when a university student opened fire with a crossbow, killing his mother, brother, and grandmother. The 23-year-old student admitted to authorities that "I wanted to kill all members of my family." The suspect's aunt was also shot and is currently receiving medical attention. According to neighbors, the suspect had a history of violent outbursts, and such an incident was unfortunately a matter of time. The use of firearms is strictly regulated in Japan, making weapon-based murders rare. While bows are technically legal in Japan, the type of arrows and bolts are restricted. So as shocking as this story is, I guess probably the most unusual aspect of it is the weapon choice of this person using a crossbow. So guns are obviously illegal in Japan to most people, but crossbows can be bought easily. What are your thoughts on this, Yasu?
Yeah, I believe one reason why the number of murders in Japan is so low is because people don't have guns. And I think it's part of human nature that once we have power, we want to use it. So the best way for people not to use guns is to stay away and not to possess them in the first place.
Mm.
And Japan has been quite successful at that compared to the US, let's say.
Mm.
But You know, using a crossbow for murder has been a blind spot for most people in Japan. And I've never heard of a murder case with a crossbow.
Yeah, I mean, I've not heard of them as they happened. But after this story broke, there's just a very quick bit of research online. And there's quite a few cases of this happening.
In Japan?
In Japan, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, like, it's not rare at all. It's not common, but it's not rare. It's happened before.
I see.
Guess, like, if you're thinking you want to kill people, right? Like, these compact crossbows, they fire with these bolts, you know. You can kill, like, a bison with one of these crossbows, right? So you
sure.
can obviously kill a person.
Hmm.
So, to me, yeah, they should be treated with the same level of, you know, danger, you know.
For sure.
The way that they're sure. issued, yeah. right? So I know that, like, if you want to buy a gun in Japan, all licenses are issued by the police. And there's, I think it's about 13 steps you have to go through to actually get a gun. So the first is you just send off an application form, and then they send a letter back, and then you have to send some, like, other evidence to back up your reasoning. You have to say why you need a gun. Then you have to go for a training course, and then the police come to your house, and you have to prove to them that you have a storage unit, that you can safely store the gun in your house. Then you have to go to, like, another training thing. And then you have to have, like, a psych evaluation as well from a registered psychiatrist. And there's some other steps as well. I can't remember everything. But it's really intense, you know, compared to America, for example,
right.
where you can just literally, in some states, you can just go and buy a gun on the day.
Right.
So, yeah, guns are really on lockdown in Japan. But other deadly weapons, like crossbows, I don't know, oddly, are not confined by the same measures.
I mean, the guns you're talking about are pretty much the guns to hunt animals, right?
Yeah.
Not like handguns.
Well, you can get handguns for, like, shooting ranges and stuff like that. Because there are shooting ranges in Japan.
Right.
So maybe you're, like, an athlete. You know, you look, shooting is like a sport, right?
Mm.
But yeah, if you want to go hunting. But any gun that can kill an animal can obviously kill a human, right? So
sure.
hunting guns are not less deadly than, you know, say other types of weaponry.
Mm.
But this does also kind of highlight a kind of story that I see quite often in Japan, which is, like, just family on family violence. It just seemed to be one of the higher ranking crimes in Japan, I would say, and tends to be, like, the younger people often attacking and sometimes killing their parents,
right.
siblings, grandparents.
Right.
But I mean, as to why that is a more common crime in Japan, couldn't really say, to be honest. Do you have any insight on that, Yasu?
Yeah, it's interesting because I never noticed the fact that there are more like family-to-family killings in Japan compared to other countries. But I think one reason could be that Japanese parents can be more kind of like oppressive towards their children.
Sure.
And, you know, Japanese children in general are... you know, taught to, you know, follow many rules, you know, societal rules, you know, rules to follow at home, you know, use, like, polite forms when talking to, like, seniors, including your parents, and all the things like that. Yeah, most kids would leave their parents' houses when they enter college by the age of, like, 18 or so. But the kind of, like, all the experiences they had from the childhood, and especially this guy is, like, 21 or 22. So he was supposed to be, like, going to college.
Sure.
But I kind of imagine, based on what I, you know, see on the news, that he has been having kind of a grudge.
I mean, it sounds like this person was possibly mentally unstable as well, you know, well, to do something as drastic as this.
Right, but is it just in Japan, or...?
It's not just in Japan, of course, but what I meant was just this type of story seems to come up more often in Japan.
Right.
My only point of reference really is in England, right?
Mm.
But, like, stories in England about people killing their family is a lot more rare than in Japan.
I see.
I think.
Mm. You've heard of a word, gaman, right?
Mm.
And children in Japan, even today, are taught to, you know, how to, like, persevere the difficulties or the oppression from your seniors and stuff. So, and I think it's not really good for people's, like, mental health.
Yeah.
I mean, it used to work in the past to some extent, but, you know, it can be more harmful than
I think it can
beneficial.
Be more harmful, definitely. I hope, the gammon culture will, you know, it won't obviously end immediately, but hopefully sometime in the future we'll kind of make some steps towards perhaps fixing this issue.
Mm-hmm.
So on to our final story. This week, it was revealed that Japanese comedian and television personality Ken Watabe has been involved in several ongoing affairs for several years. Ken, the Tsukomi member of the manzai duo Unjashu, admitted to the allegations after they were announced Thursday morning. He has since cancelled his TV appearances and issued an apology to the public. This affair is particularly shocking due to his public portrayal as a perfect power couple with his wife, fashion model and actress Sasaki Nozomi. The unlikely couple, with a sizeable age gap of 15 years, garnered positive attention from fans when they went public and just recently welcomed their first child in 2018. Ken has admitted to seeing multiple women while dating Sasaki after their marriage and during her pregnancy. One alleged mistress has come forward, claiming to often meet with Ken in secret at a public bathroom in Roppongi Hills. Sasaki Nozomi has yet to give a public statement. So just off the bat, Ken Watabe is not to be confused with Ken Watanabe, the famous Japanese actor who was also exposed for a affair scandal a couple of years ago. Because
mm-hmm.
every time I read Ken Watabe, I think Ken Watanabe.
Yeah, he's and not the last samurai.
That's it. Yeah. It's almost the same story.
Mm-hmm.
What are people's reactions online to this story, Asu?
First of all, like, there have been so many affair scandals in Japan recently, especially mm-hmm. this year. It's so strange.
Oh, really?
And probably this one could be the biggest because of his wife. Nozomi Sasaki has been the one of the most popular models and actresses in Japan. And she has so many fans.
Mm.
So many people, including her fans, are really angry at this guy. Yeah, obviously that's the general reaction from the
course.
Public,
yeah,
of
yeah.
course. Yeah. And, you know, I was never paying attention to this type of news when I was outside Japan. Including the U.S. Maybe except for Trump, right?
Yeah.
But how is it like in the U.K.? Like
for affair scandals, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, like how big of a scandal it is when a celebrity is in an affair. How do people react to such news?
That's a good question. I guess probably the biggest factor is how popular the celebrities are. That's probably the biggest factor,
for
right?
Sure.
But I'd say that obviously in England we have like gossip magazines and you know gossip websites and stuff like that. But I feel like people's personal lives are less closely linked to their careers. So for example, in Japan, when a comedian commits this kind of act, all his shows are like cancelled immediately. He's dropped by his manager. He's like just shamed to the ends of the earth. And he should be. But it's the correlation between the exposure of the act and how quickly his career is just dismantled is kind of alarming. Because, and I don't think in this case he's innocent. But maybe in some cases, it's not always the case, right? There might be more to the story. Definitely not in this case because he's admitted to it and it's several occasions. So there's no exoneration for Watabe-san, unfortunately. Yeah, I'd say it's kind of similar in England, but maybe just less severe.
Mm.
But, if you do this to your wife, then obviously you're a bad person. and it's not just once, it's several times.
More than several times.
It's several stages in their relationship.
Yeah,
yeah. It's just,
he had several women that he was having an affair with.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, yeah, and I didn't even know who these two people were until yesterday when I saw this story, right? This Nozomi woman, she's beautiful. She's a very beautiful model, obviously. And this guy, he does look a little bit sneaky. He's got a very sneaky face to him. He looks a bit Weasley.
Well, yeah, so after seeing the news, for sure.
I don't know,
right?
Like something about his face. He looks a bit dishonest. I mean, because I heard the news first. But,
I think so.
He doesn't look. I'm right. Surprised that a woman this beautiful would be married to this guy.
Well, the thing is that this guy has been around for many years. Mm. I think his career is almost close to 20 years.
Mm.
How old is he? Yeah, because he's already in like in the late 40s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
And as a matter of fact, even though you said like his face kind of looks sneaky, right? many people thought that he's a genuine nice person.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what like 80-90% of Japanese people like who were watching him on the TV thought.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I was also a bit surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like I say, maybe my opinion would be different if I knew who he was beforehand. Mm. But when I heard about the story, as soon as I heard that he was a comedian, I was also like, oh, that doesn't surprise me. Because I've heard that comedians are very charai, right?
Right, right.
So charai means just a bit of like a player, a bit of a playboy, a bit sleazy guy, right? Mm. So there was that story of Takashi Okumura a few weeks ago, right? And I wouldn't say that his particular comment about girls going into prostitution was charai, but like him and all these guy mates kind of laughing about that kind of situation. That's the kind of imagery I get from a lot of these people. Mm. So, you know, it doesn't really surprise me.
Right. More or less, you're right. Because there's a way of thinking in Japan called gei no koyashi.
Okay.
And in this case, gei in Japanese means
art,
like
right?
Art. Yeah, mm. Art in general. Mm. And koyashi means it becomes like a fertilizer.
Mm.
So there's a way of thinking that all those comedians having love affairs,
mm.
Would those experiences kind of like how do you say, like, enrich their like career? I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but this way of thinking has been around for probably more than 100 years.
Mm.
It's part of the entertainment industry, entertainment culture in Japan.
It's certainly an easy justification if you want to tell yourself.
Oh,
that,
yeah,
you
know? For sure. Yeah. You know, whatever we do, like, you know.
It's like, that's why the Beatles took so many drugs, right? Yeah. Would they have been the biggest band in the world?
Yeah, probably. You know, in Japan, as we discussed before, taking drugs is a felony, mm. right? And if you're caught like doing any kind of like drugs,
mm.
then all your shows will be canceled, and you may never return to the entertainment industry in Japan.
Yeah.
But those actors, musicians, or comedians, mm. instead of not doing most of them not doing drugs in Japan, they're kind of like justified to, you know, go into such like love affairs.
Sure, sure. Yeah, it does seem to be a very common story in Japan. And you mentioned just this year, kind of many affairs kind of could be coming public. Mm. But it's a very common story in general. And it's weird how many like stories you hear of just men cheating on their wives. Actually, to most women cheating on their husbands. It's way more common in Japan than you might first think. Like extramarital affairs. So that wraps it up for all the news stories this episode. Now let's jump into the final segment of the show, Word of the Week.
Okay, so the word of the week is ikemen or ikemen. I'm sure you have heard of this phrase, Julian.
Yes. It's because people always call me an ikemen.
Yeah, I mean, joking, you know, I'm supposed to laugh, but actually, yeah. Like, do you remember when we had a meeting in Akihabara this week? A Japanese friend of mine was calling you ikemen.
Oh, he actually did, yeah. Mm. But I wasn't sure if he was being sarcastic. But probably not. That's just my British side saying it, you know?
Right. So I think he really meant it, but... Mm. So, can you explain what that
sure,
is?
Sure, yeah. Ikemen is just basically a hot guy. There's not much more to say, I guess. But maybe in Japan, it's, you know, the kind of classic, like, boy band, you know, like, smooth skin, like, just kind of fashionable, cool guy, very appealing to women.
Right.
I guess, is there a deeper meaning to it than that, do you think?
Yeah, so all the description, you think they... apply to you, right?
Yeah, of course.
You're like
obviously.
The epitome of ikemen. Mm. Do you know how this word has been made?
Like, I don't actually know where it came
okay,
from.
Okay. So it's a combination of the Japanese word iketeru,
Kiteru.
And man is actually the English word man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a bit weird because a man is supposed to be plural, right?
Yeah,
but we call whomever like ikemen for a single person.
Actually, yeah, because I always pronounce it ikeman because it feels more natural to say it like that because you're saying like hot man, right? But I know it is ikemen. I always say it wrong because it's kind of in my head.
don't say ikeman. Ikemen is correct.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the word iketeru is like, it means something like cool, stylish, or handsome.
Yeah.
Hot.
Mm. So obviously ikemen is mainly for males because it sounds a bit masculine. But is there a similar kind of slang word for hot women, attractive women, Yasu?
Yeah, so there is no such word as ike women because the adjective iketeru is considered better suited for a man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it kind of sounds a bit like masculine, but I think the word the closest word is bijin. And bijin's B means beautiful and jin is a person. And bijin probably is the biggest compliment for women in general. I'm not sure if you know, but there are something called like Sandai Bijin in Japan, which is the word used to describe three prefectures that are known for having so many Bijins.
Oh, okay.
And they are the first one is Akita Bijin, Akita Prefecture. Actually, even Nozomi Sasaki, the actress and the model that we were talking in the previous news, she's Akita Bijin.
Oh, okay.
She's from Akita.
Makes sense.
Right. Makes sense, right? And the second one is Kyoto Bijin.
Mm.
Kyoto is the ancient capital of Japan.
Also like Maiko and Geisha as well. So
right,
that makes
right,
sense,
right. Yeah. So kind of makes sense, right? And the third one is Hakata Bijin. So I'm not sure why Hakata, but...
Well, I mean, you already know this, but my wife is from Hakata. She's from Fukuoka, so she's Hakata Bijin, thankfully for me.
Okay, so yeah, you must be happy hearing this.
But it's actually funny that you mentioned that, because people always tell her that she looks a bit Korean, Japanese people. That area of Japan is super close to South Korea,
right?
So there is, you know, lineage, there's probably a lot of crossover there, so it makes sense, you know?
Yeah, but... I guess many people appreciate such diversity in that part of
Japan.
Yeah, so just remember the word, these important words, ikemen for men and bijin for women.
So that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Wherever you're listening to us, make sure you're subscribed for a new episode every single week.
Thanks for listening, everyone. For more Japan-related content, check out utokyo.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or YouTube.
So stay healthy, stay safe, everybody. Hope somebody this week calls you a ikemen or bijin and really perks up your time. And be sure to check back next week for the next episode of This Week in Japan.